Irish Illustrated Insider is sponsored by VisitSouthBend.com. Is it time to check a Notre Dame home game off your bucket list? Has it been too long since you've soaked in the game day atmosphere in person? Whether it's for the first time ever or in a while, start planning your trip to South Bend to watch the Fighting Irish with ideas and inspiration at VisitSouthBend.com.
You're listening to Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley, both of us from Irish Illustrated. And it is the aftermath of Notre Dame's 48-20 victory over USC, Notre Dame's sixth straight home win over USC. And Tim, we didn't expect Notre Dame to win by four touchdowns, but we did expect a bounce back, strong performance. I thought the offensive line, despite looking at the numbers, did much better. They were able to spring Audric Estime and to get some traction in the ground game. The passing game was modest, but it was the defensive performance that won the day. Everybody's a big L. Golden fan. Now for what really was an absolutely sensational plan for USC's offense and Caleb Williams. They kept him contained. Very rarely did he escape from the pocket and have something to run for. The Notre Dame secondary did an outstanding job, mainly in man-to-man coverage against a group of quality receivers. And then even everything from the second level with the linebackers coming up and filling gaps when Caleb Williams did want to run a football. Just a sensational plan and execution by the Notre Dame defense against USC.
I think of all things we did not expect was three interceptions for USC. If you told me they would get to Caleb Williams and corral him, get some sacks, pressures, and tackle much better than last year, I think, yeah, I think that's what they worked on.
We laughed about the possibility.
No, I didn't. I mean, we were thinking tipped interceptions only, really. They really got into Caleb Williams. By the way, did you see Caleb Williams' fumble recovery on Boubacar Traore's sack?
Not exactly.
The best fumble recovery I've ever seen in my entire life, because that's also two Notre Dame defenders for a scoop and score right there. He falling down, being pulled away from the ball, just reaches out with his hand and snatches a bouncing football and brings it back to himself. It is incredible. I know it's an incredible play. So that's the best thing he did though in the first half, and that is amazing.
I don't know that anybody was in a position to scoop and score because they were in a more celebratory.
Mode. Fantastic night for Notre Dame fans, for Notre Dame's coaching staff and players. They absolutely needed it in every way. I think you can lose to Caleb Williams and USC in a way we said they would, 34-30, if you come into that game undefeated, or maybe if you come into that game and you just crushed Louisville. Either way, you know, but this would have been a problem for Notre Dame going forward. And I just want to reiterate, it is 12 tragic plays on football Saturdays in college, and we jump to conclusions all the time when we watch Notre Dame play one football game about everybody in the program. Al Golden was getting fired last time he played Caleb Williams. Now people are wondering where he's going to coach next year, if it's going to be on the East Coast as a head coach. Is he going to go straight to the pros? Is the Broyles Award going to go to the first time ever two-loss defensive coordinator? It is a great week for Notre Dame fans because they get to go into the bye week as everything but a playoff team is how Notre Dame can feel about their football team in terms of positivity. Everything but that is on the horizon, and the rest of the country loves them briefly too.
Yeah, as we know, the narrative changes every 7 days. Boubacar Traore has to be on the field now, which maybe he does.
I'd put him on the field as well.
Which maybe he does. I'm not discounting that. But we do have a question in the second segment about him, and I'm not sure that most people know how to pronounce his name yet, but they do want him on the field, and I get that. And you know, really, it was a complete performance win over USC. Now I understand that the offense didn't produce big numbers, but the defense obviously was outstanding. The special teams played their role with Jadarian Price and some key blocks that we can talk about on that one that I saw on film, and then, I mean, the offense struggled, there's no doubt about it, but they did turn the three interceptions in the first half into three touchdowns, a couple of them short fields. So that's small consolation, because I know a lot of people are still very upset with the direction of the defense, and understandably so.
The offense,
they have lost their way. I mean, Jared Parker has lost his way in the process here, and of course we'll talk about that more, but I mean, for right now, I would like to focus on that defensive game plan and the execution. It's one thing to have a game plan and coaches come out of it saying, you know, we didn't execute the way we wanted to. The Notre Dame coaching staff, the defensive staff, can say they absolutely executed the way they wanted to defensively on so many different levels in terms of, you know, what they did with the wide receivers, how they limited them. They limited the yards after catch generally. Yardage just in general. I mean,
you can't completely limit it. It's USC. No, their guys exactly. Make plays.
You can't. The slants, you can't stop. And that was most of their damage, really, was slants. But the 4-point, we talked about this after the game, Tim, the 4.1 yards per snap of a Caleb Williams-led offense is just fantastic.
You know, I mentioned this in the report card. I think Joe Schmidt actually echoed it on Twitter. I can't think of a better defensive performance considering what you're facing this season in college football than Notre Dame against Caleb Williams, because it wasn't weather related. It wasn't like a pouring rainstorm and 34 degrees pouring rain, winds everywhere. The weather was fine to play football in. It was absolutely fine. Caleb Williams, less than 200 yards passing in a situation where he had to bring them back and had to be able to throw the ball. Three picks, all those sacks. When Caleb Williams ran, you never thought in this game, oh God, they just let him go. One was, all right, he kept it on fourth and one, and he's just too fast. And the other one was he escaped, and Leofau found out he's just too fast. His speed is unique. He's a unique athlete. I know people are killing him right now, and it's nice that Notre Dame finally took a Heisman away from a USC player instead of helping him win it in these matchups. But you're not going to find a better effort against a team. I look back at Utah, and everybody's like, you know, I know they use Utah's game plan a little bit. We talked about that in the post-game overtime. Yeah, I mean, the first game against Utah, he had 5 touchdown passes and no picks. So I think he did okay when they lost to Utah in that beautiful game plan. And then he had, 3-1 on a hamstring in the championship game? Notre Dame, this is the best Caleb Williams has ever seen in one game against him, I bet, in his life.
There's no doubt. I mean, because in my head, I have the images of last year's game and the images of Saturday night's game. And they are so different because he ran around a lot and had.
He's great. He's tremendous. I mean,
last year he had to do that. But like you can see in your mind, every time he thought on Saturday night, okay, I can go here. Oh, I can't do that. I can go here. I can't do that. And it was just, and that's what I'm talking about. The execution of the defensive plan, the defensive line staying in their lanes, the timing of linebackers breaking up. Like when Leofau and Bertrand would see Williams starting to think, okay, I'm going to take off, they would break up and then take that idea out of his head. It was brilliant. And then you mix it with the man-to-man coverage on the back end against quality receivers. Brendan Rice was neutralized.
When you think that, so you know how you look at stats and say, oh, Benjamin Morrison gave up a touchdown. No, he didn't. Caleb Williams ran around for 5 seconds and threw a backhanded. That's just amazing play. Their defense was fantastic. If you think JD Bertrand was probably the fourth best defender in that game for Notre Dame, and that is an MVP effort he put forward. I mean, Javonte Jean-Baptiste was all over Caleb Williams. We already know Xavier Watts was the best. Howard Cross was all over Caleb Williams, as he always is. Benjamin Morrison had a great day. JD Bertrand had a great day. Any of those guys behind Xavier Watts. Best game
Mustafa Mensah played in Notre Dame uniform.
Yeah, fantastic. Riley Mills played well again. It's an amazing effort by the defense. They are streaking. You can go ahead and lament the fact that they lost to Louisville. Really, you should lament the loss that they lost. You should lament the loss to Ohio State because they got beat by Louisville pretty good. They got their butts kicked by Louisville. Feels like a one loss team. It's a two loss team, but it was a tough stretch. And they are peaking right now, going in the right time. And so is their next opponent, but we'll get to that next week.
They're peaking right now. So it was a bad time for a bye week. Is that what you're telling me?
I mean, peaking right now going into November. It's fantastic.
Okay, I just want to give you trouble. But having Thomas Harper back was a great thing as well.
The bye week's not going to help against Pitt, I can tell you that much. But it would be better than if they had to play right now. So.
Yeah. Jalen Snead played.
Oh, yeah. Thomas Harper. Good point. Thomas Harper was fantastic.
I mean, Thomas Harper, a complete difference maker with him on the field. He impacts.
Cam Hart allowed 10 yards, Tim.
Pardon me?
Cam Hart allowed 10 yards passing.
He was amazing too. Most of his coverage was off coverage. You saw a lot of press from Morrison. Yeah, Morrison, you know, I don't like in retrospect, you can look at it and say, okay, there were some PIs and some holding calls, defensive holding calls. But, you know, when you're playing a group like that, some of those aren't bad penalties.
No, they're not. In fact, if you think about it, it was 3 first downs and 35 yards on Notre Dame's defense for holding and penalties, but 30 yards back the other way because they also drew 2 offensive pass interference penalties. The corners. Notre Dame drew 2 offensive pass interference penalties. It was basically they gave up a first down over the aggregate.
The one bad, I would say the one bad penalty against Morrison was the interference on 1st and 25 where he just kind of, you know, ran the guy over. I don't remember which receiver it was, but you know, that's going to happen. Split second decisions. We have a question in the second segment about Marcus Freeman's decision at the end of the first half to call a timeout. Sometimes split second decisions, you have to do what you have to do and have to react the way you think you need to react based upon what you're seeing.
I was really glad the special teams had that Jadarian Price touchdown to kind of offset Zachariah Branch, because first of all, Zachariah Branch is the closest thing to punting to Desmond Howard and Rocket right now in college football. When he catches the ball, I know Jason Garrett said, 100 too many times every time the ball was punted. The second he made he reversed field for a half a second on that punt return, we just looked, oh God, you knew exactly where that ball was going. It was coming back the other way. And the unicorn, Bryce McPherson, was able to maintain his angle and knock him out of bounds.
You know who else chased that down? It was Jason Anya coming from a punt protector position, which is
my point was, though, that I thought the special teams had such a good plan, and they got 26 yards on a return and 25 yards on a return, and Spencer Schrader kicked well and Bryce McPherson kicked away from him. It was good that they were able to offset the 60 yarder with a Jadarian Price kill shot, because otherwise I don't think Marty Biagi's effort would have been properly appreciated in that game.
Yeah, and that came at the 9-minute mark of the fourth quarter, where, you know, you're just expecting this mad rush now by USC, 3 and out, and USC gets the ball. And so at that point, the game's over, because that just completely deflated USC. They're back down by 18, I guess, at that point, and it's 3 scores again, and they're done. So that was huge. It was huge for Jadarian Price. Jadarian Price has had 1 carry of the football in 3 games. Which
they tried to get him a screen, right? And we were thinking that might have been the Ohio State screen.
I think that was the Ohio State screen, but whereas their defensive end reacted differently, so did their outside. I don't know if it was outside backer or safety or what, but
you know, it's probably Tim. You know what the problem with these Ohio State 2 games are? We can look back years from now and call it the Ohio State double safety blitz and the Ohio State screen, and we're going to know exactly what we're talking about. That's an unfortunate way to drop 2 games to a power program like that.
Yeah.
Double safety blitz is worse.
Yeah, and you know, we've never liked those Benjamin Morrison corner blitzes, although that's how they got there. Was it the second interception? I think it was the second interception. And that was also, there was some really good push from Josh Burnham up the middle on their – He curled around and came up the middle and hooked up with their right guard, number 52, and really kicked his butt. I like Josh Burnham. I just would like to see him.
I can
on
tell the, you like Josh Burnham. I do.
I think that he's extremely productive per snap of the football. And I mean, his future is really, really bright at Notre Dame. But you'd like to see him on the field a bit more. But I get it. Nano Safamensa played really, really quality football the other day. He had 4 tackles, which is probably a career high. I didn't check, but he's still so great. He is probably the best at all of them of executing the game plan when it comes to staying in your pass rush lanes. And I think he might have played a little bit more than he had been and played really well. Tim, anything else?
It had to be his best game in a win, because remember, everybody forgets he was great against Stanford last year, but there wasn't a lot of great in that game for Notre Dame.
So yeah, best performance in a win, but you know, and I just, the last thing I hear in segment one, I just, the offensive line did enough for them to be successful in the running game. Now, if you look at the numbers, you say, oh no, they weren't, but I almost said Bettis. Estimate
would have been a nice thing. It would have been good.
Yeah, estimate carved out some space. The offensive line carved out some space. I thought Coogan played better. I thought Spindler did some good things. The real challenge here was Bear Alexander in the middle of that defensive line and Zeke Correll having to handle him at times. They ended up resorting to double teams because that is really too much of an ask for Zeke Correll on a
spot
basis.
There was a question on our board saying, and I think it was sarcastic towards us, but he must not have watched the game back or not watched the middle of the line. What happened to the great Bear Alexander? Well, he was mucking up everything. Bear Alexander did is what his job is.
Yeah, the great Bear Alexander had to be accounted for frequently by two guys. Look,
I'm with you on the offensive line, though, Tim, because I think actually most readers were, too. I gave the rushing offense a B. And the final explanation was Notre Dame's rushing attack last night was undervalued over these last 16 hours. Its stubbornness kept the pedestrian passing game afloat. Without that offensive line's push and without the fact that Sam Hartman was not ever officially pressured, although that's not how it works with when you kind of go back and look.
Yeah.
No quarterback hurries listed, no sacks, not really ever in jeopardy. That's a great effort by the offensive line because the one thing USC has is the great Bear Alexander to push and also some edge rushers, some undisciplined edge rushers that did not get home.
Yeah, sometimes good players don't play well in the next game that we're about to watch and evaluate. It doesn't mean that they're not good football players. Bear Alexander is really good. And USC's interior defensive line is so much better for having him because they don't get gashed up the middle like they did last year. What was Estime's longest run was only, it was 14 yards,
but they had if I told you before the game, Notre Dame's going to have 60% rush efficiency against Ohio USC. All right, win.
Absolutely.
Win the game. That's what they had.
Yeah, absolutely. Take that.
Good question there. I don't know if it's on our, I don't know if it's on our, I think it might've been on the board. It is surprising. He did not get another second level run though. Estime, because there was enough of a push where you thought he might. Usually when he gets to the second level, there's problems. I think USC tackled actually a little better than they normally do at the second level in this game, too.
They tackled way better than what?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. How about I'm trying to think who the runner was. It was Kalen Bullitt that came up from the safety position. Remember that play?
Oh, yeah. No, he's going to be drafted, too. He's a player, too.
I don't know if it was. It might have been Jeremiah Love that he.
It was Love. Love had a rough day getting free.
Yeah, he did. There was not much room for him to maneuver. And then, you know, Jadarian Price not getting the touches. You hope that he can get some more touches here as they move forward. We have plenty to address in segment two, and we will do that in segment two. But first, you've heard us talk about home field apparel since the start of the season. There are a lot of collegiate apparel brands out there, but we wanted to partner with home field because their designs are the best out there. Some of Irish Illustrated's favorites are the Sam Hartman Victory March tee, the Script tee, and the Retro long sleeve. I do like that long sleeve. Be sure to go to homefieldapparel.com, filter by Notre Dame, and see what we're talking about. There's also currently an exclusive football bundle, which includes a baseball tee, sweats, a hoodie, and more. It's the perfect gift for a fellow Irish fan or a perfect gift to treat yourself for being a loyal Notre Dame fan. And our listeners get the exclusive deal using code Irish Illustrated. Irish Illustrated gets you a 15% off discount on your first order. We know you're all wearing Notre Dame gear, so if you're in need of a refresh, we really think you should check out Home Field Apparel. Their designs are super unique, and a lot of thought goes into each concept. There's really nothing else on the market like what Home Field is doing. You can find them at homefieldapparel.com. And again, use our code Irish Illustrated for 15% off your first order. Segment two coming up, burning up the boards.
If you're coming to a game this season, you have to check out Game Day Your Way, the official tailgate service provider of Notre Dame. Game Day Your Way offers everything you need, including tailgate gear, catering, and even beverage delivery right to your spot. And their Irish Express transportation from Chicago allows you to tailgate while you travel to their all-inclusive party zone in South Bend. Let Game Day deal with all the hassle so you can focus on the fun. For tailgates, tickets, transportation, and more, visit GameDayYourWay.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Some things are just made for each other, like tailgates and touchdowns. We're adding one more pair to the list, Aer Lingus and college football. Join us in Dublin this August for the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. Too soon? Plan your winter or spring break now with non-stop flights from cities including Chicago, Boston, Los Angeles and New York. Fly in comfort to Dublin, our European hub. Go coast to coast and discover the sights of Ireland or explore any of the 50 plus European cities we connect to, including Amsterdam, London, Paris and Rome. Visit aerlingus.com to book today.
Welcome back to segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question is from Mac341. Did you see more from the offensive line to say things are moving back into the right direction?
Yeah, I think it was a step forward. Again, not yardage wise, but it was a step forward. Well, heck, 28 carries for 44 yards a week before. It doesn't take much to step forward. But I did think, I thought the guards played better. I thought Zeke Corral battled against a really tough assignment. Still don't see Blake Fisher flashing, I think, like we expect. But, you know, it was progress against a defensive line at USC that's giving up like 4.1 yards per carry, which isn't great, but it's
better fine than, though. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think so. Pass protection was good. We didn't remember we were talking about Solomon Bird and Jamil Muhammad pregame, and Muhammad got banged up at one point. I think he continued to play, but those guys weren't much of a factor in the pass rush. That may be the most impressive thing is that, you know, Hartman wasn't sacked or wasn't pressured. Yeah. As you said, those QBHs that's a really, really inconsistent stat that people that varies from one stadium to the next.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they did a really good job of protecting Hartman.
Anytime it says zero, it does mean he didn't get home very often, though. No matter how you want to look at QBH, it definitely means he wasn't hit. Otherwise, that would go down as a QB hurry. I think the strangest thing about this season is as long as you get out of your head that like, oh, they have the best offensive line in the country, like people always like to say about Notre Dame before season start, they also don't have an offensive line that ever should have played like that against Louisville and Duke. I don't to this. It's going to be weird for me to try and reconcile that 8 terrible quarters. They are noticeably better at home. I think I kind of dismissed that a little bit too much last week pregame. They've been very good against Ohio State and very good against USC at home. Ohio State's defensive line is very good, so that counts. NC State's defensive line is very good. I don't know how you grade that NC State game, really. I guess you give them a job well done because of the 45 offensive points and the 80-yard touchdown run. They certainly would have lost most. If you graded every down as a coach, I bet they lost more than they won in the NC State game. So you're probably looking at two bad games, two good games, and a win.
Yeah, the discouraging thing with Louisville was, and you saw it, Tim, you said it as soon as the game started about how many guys that Louisville had in the box, and they did that consistently. And that, let's face it, it's difficult to come up with answers when somebody is that extreme with it, like say Navy was, you know, last year. But you have to come up with answers, and they didn't. And ultimately, you know, that's what leads to a 44-yard rushing game. But no, I thought it was better. And Tim, I'm going to jump ahead to a question here to tie that in with another one, and that's Go Irish 82. Everyone talks about third down efficiency. What do you think about the second down calls?
Yeah, it's a great question because I started last Friday a study on this when I went back and looked at the Louisville first down offense that I thought was going to be tragic, and it was absolutely just fine. There were nothing wrong with Notre Dame's first down play calls and their yardage gained in that game. So second down has been the problem leading into third and longs. Notre Dame has been very successful on first down. Bad radio here, but I'm going to pull it up. Obviously, they were tremendous on first down in the non-Power 5 games, and that's not what people want to talk about anymore, and I agree. But if you're going to be over 4 or 5 yards a carry on first down versus USC, Ohio State, Duke, and Louisville, something's wrong if your third down offense is this bad, and it really is second down. So I'm interested to dive into it and see what tendencies there are All right, NC State, they average 7.12 yards per first down snap. Ohio State, 4.24, totally fine. Duke, 4.53, and Louisville, 4.29. Those aren't great winning numbers against those last three, but they're absolutely keep you ahead of the chains. In fact, that is considered an efficient first down play. So, and then, of course, it's absurd against the other teams that don't count anymore.
Yeah. You know, I've always felt like second down calls are, I mean, those are the hardest to make, because if you like, let's say you throw incomplete on first down. Well,
remember it used to be a handoff all the time to Cam McDaniel. Who was it then? Was it Chuck back then? Who was the OC that always handed off on second and 10 for Notre Dame?
Yeah. I mean, and you look across college football and you see a lot of that. You throw incomplete on first down, and it's almost like there's an obligation to run it on second down sometimes. But second downs, I think, are the key right now. This is a good time for a bye week for Jared Parker in the offense, because they have to come up with some solutions. This is absolutely not sustainable as you move forward.
Yeah, the third down. There's no good calls for third and long, though. They're not going to be great on third and long.
There's no doubt, unless you have Caleb Williams and Notre Dame's not the defense playing against them.
And receivers. That is one issue on third down.
Yeah, no doubt. There's no doubt. It is a combination of things. You can't just say it's not just Jared Parker. It is Sam Hartman not being as accurate as he was earlier in the season. It is the wide receivers not being targetable because that's just a low percentage proposition right now.
Yes.
It is a combination of things, and they're going to have to figure out a way to combine those things for more progress.
And that, in a related note, we'll go back to this because, Tim, you just put some stats out too for the receivers. Denver Maximus asks, with the wide receivers having only two catches versus USC, should we quit hoping something becomes something it will not be, a consistently explosive offense?
Yeah,
you got the stats here.
Yeah, the last three games, the wide receiver targets have been, it was 4 for 14 against Duke. It was 11 for 21 against Louisville. And as you point out, Tim, most of those were chasing
a
3-score deficit. And then Saturday, it was just, they targeted wideouts just 9 times and connected on 5 of them. And 4 of those are by Chris Tyree, the former running back, and Jordan Faison, the former walk-on wide receiver. Who had the other one? Flores. Flores had the 24 yarder. So, you know, it's not a high percentage decision right now to target receivers. They need, we've said this for 3 weeks now, you need Jaden Thomas and Jaden Greathouse, two of your best wideouts. There's no doubt about that. You need them on the field and healthy. Those are easy guys to make a decision that, hey, we want to target them, but they've got to be healthy in order to target them.
Yeah, very quickly, because people are going to ask, in this last game, do I have the last game pulled up? Let's hope I do. Another bad radio moment here for me. I think I have the last game pulled up. But the targets or the snaps, you were asking how much Greathouse played. I mean, he actually played second most among the receivers. But no one got more than 3 targets at wide receiver. Chris Tyree with 3. Tobias Merriweather did see a dip in his target or in his snaps. He's never, I do think he's hurt though too. I don't want to spend all season making excuses for Tobias Merriweather, but 16 snaps for Merriweather, 16 snaps for Rico Flores, 32 snaps for Greathouse. Obviously Jaden Thomas is still kind of working his way back. Cause he only had 6 snaps. I thought going into the week, it was going to be the other way around, but it turned, as JB said in our instant analysis pregame, look for Jaden Greathouse to play and start.
He only had one target.
To find something out of Greathouse, Flores, Tyree, Faison, and Thomas going forward in the passing game and allow Merriweather to help too. But right now, Merriweather was 26 career targets with 8 catches.
That's
a bad situation, but they need him a little bit. But I do think those other 5, you got to get something, because USC was able to take Mitchell Evans away. I don't think people aren't always going to be able to take Mitchell Evans away. They were not always going to have a safety and linebackers that can do it, but he needs help. We talked about it a lot. Greathouse and Thomas are the guys to help, right?
Yeah. The question is consistent, explosive offense. And I think we're
that will not happen.
Don't be looking for that. But I mean, productivity from the wide receivers, the guys that you mentioned, Tyree, I like Faison on the field, Flores, Thomas and Greathouse.
Flores made a play to help set up a touchdown. He had the 24-yarder.
Yeah.
He had a drop. I consider that a drop because he dropped it before he got hit. Coming across the middle.
He knows he's going to get lit up, and he could have really gotten lit up there. Jaden Thomas is the leader of the wide receiver core, and he's been, you know, he hasn't been a factor the last three games. And so
did you ever see where he got hurt against Ohio State? I did in the second half. You could see when he goes down blocking. I have a feeling he was already hurt the way he went down on his hamstring. Now, I'm not a doctor, so I can't see when guys hurt their hamstrings, but he was blocking on the sideline and he just collapsed to the ground. So, and they never play again. I'm just assuming that's how he was hurt. These 8 days are important for Jaden Thomas to get healthy for the stretch run. And he has another break too. They just need him out there. He's very important to the offense.
It has to be more than he needs to be a viable target, not just out there, but I know that's what you're saying. So, I mean, when it comes to the bye week, yes, it absolutely is essential, critical to the wideout core moving forward. We have a question from Play Like a Champ 7. L. Golden's defense continues to impress. Does he get a head coaching call? What are your thoughts on what's most likely to happen? 1, he chooses to stay. 2, he leaves and Indy promotes from within and Play Like a Champ would like Mike Mickens elevated to coordinator. Or 3, there's a name outside of Notre Dame that Freeman absolutely will target.
2 is the most likely for me by a wide margin. And Mike Mickens is going to be a defensive coordinator soon. So he's been a great for Notre Dame. He's been a great cornerbacks coach for Notre Dame. Look at that unit compared to when he took over.
Well, he's been fantastic. I don't know if it does either,
but he's going to get a shot because he's been fantastic. And that's what happens with position coaches. They get shots because they're fantastic, I think, is how they all kind of evolve into a spot. But I think number 2 is more likely than 3. And I don't think 1 is as likely as 2 or 3.
How many cornerback coaches do you know as D coordinators?
I don't know off the top of my head because I don't think of that. Unless they coached at Notre Dame first, I don't really know where they.
Right. Look, Mike Mickens has done a fantastic job with the cornerbacks. I just don't know that. I mean, how does that translate to coordinator? I guess you can say that about any guy that assists.
Right. That's what I mean.
He's
probably already a passing game coordinator worthy. Offer, you know, that type of thing.
No, I mean, I think he's been fantastic. I would hate to see it take away from his productivity with the cornerbacks. I don't know if that would happen.
Perfect world, yeah. But we're being selfish in this situation. Mike Mickens probably wants to be a coordinator.
I get that. And I just don't know if that's a legit correlation. He's a great cornerbacks coach. That doesn't mean great. I guess I've never looked at him as a coordinator because I don't think of cornerback coaches as coordinators.
Do you think Golden will stay?
I don't think Golden will stay if he's offered something in the NFL or offered a coaching job.
I've always been surprised that we heard recently, or it was probably in August, it's a blur, that there would be head coaching interest for an East Coast Power 5 program.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't see him wanting to dive into the recruiting nature of this as opposed to like going back to the NFL or staying one more year at Notre Dame and going back to the NFL.
I agree with that sentiment. Absolutely. I don't know what the answer is to, obviously it's a good question. I got to believe that Freeman has a list of people that he has an eye on. Well, that, I mean, part of which that he looked at before he chose L. Golden. But there is a, you almost have to name Mike Mickens.
That's what I'm saying.
I know that's what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah. If you go get the perfect world is Notre Dame finds a great experienced defensive. The perfect world is Al Golden stays. The next best world is you get a experienced defensive coordinator and selfishly Mike Mickens stays on and is your cornerbacks coach and gets a raise and Notre Dame keeps recruiting and developing great corners. But that's just 2 people on a podcast saying it sure would be nice to have the great situation again next year.
Well, if it comes to, do you get to keep them or you lose them, well, then I want them to be the defensive coordinator.
That's where I'm coming from, man.
I want him to be coaching the cornerbacks. I just don't – maybe I'm missing something here about D coordinators that coach corners. It just seems – because it's such a monstrous –
But secondary coaches – because just what if I said secondary coaches, Tim?
Well, it seems like it's safety coaches that are coordinators, not cornerback coaches.
I don't know. I think if I said, Elliott, Cooks. Well, Cooks was only a safeties coach too, wasn't he? Yeah. I don't know. I think it's the term probably as opposed to if he's a secondary coach. Then it's just nowadays we only have about a 6-year window, Tim, of separating coaches like this because they added a coach. So you can always have 10 with special teams, quarter, safety, corner.
Yeah.
I think it used to be a lot of defensive back coach at Notre Dame, which is part of it.
Look, if Mike Mickens is 3/4 of a coordinator that he is as a cornerbacks coach, I'm all for it. Sign me up.
I was just being selfish. That's just trying to keep everybody intact for a good defense after they beat USC and Caleb Williams. Tech Domer says, Xavier Watts, the most dominant individual defensive performance for Notre Dame since, and he thinks back to Stephon Tuitt versus USC in the Andrew Hendricks game. I have a couple different thoughts.
Yeah, he also, the first name that came to mind, and actually Tech Domer included the name, that I think he mentioned Sampson as Maurice Crum against UCLA. Yeah. I don't remember his complete stats. For a linebacker to have 3 picks is crazy.
He was touchdowns, too.
Yeah. That's right. That's the first name that comes to mind. That's been a while now.
I mean, Howard Cross 2 weeks ago.
Howard Cross 2 weeks ago.
That's fine.
he was
dominant.
The memory loss is kicking in there. Howard Cross was just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Another one, and this doesn't matter at all, but it does a little because you beat Miami, was Jerron Jones against Miami in 2016. Used their center as a projectile device the entire game to get 7 tackles for loss and 5 sacks. He was a monster. Incredible. I mean, it was Miami. That's not playing Miami of Ohio.
Oh, exactly. I don't know that Miami was in a real good spot at that point.
No, but neither was Notre Dame.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. No, it was, and Tim, you and I talked about it. Like, and it wasn't just the first interception. It was by the second series. We're like, damn, Watts is doing everything. And there was still way, way, way more to come.
Yeah. Yeah. He was fantastic. I'm not taking away from it all. I'm just saying there's been a lot of good individual performances. Trying to think back in, in the secondary, it's tough. I'm sure Julian Love had himself a day in there where he probably had 5 pass breakups. And we're not thinking of it off the top of our head in 2017. Tavon Coney dominated LSU in the Citrus Bowl. I know that because I wrote him in as my MVP. And was passing it in when Miles Boykin made that catch. Yeah. Nope, it's give me that back. Give me that back real fast. He was great in that. There's plenty, but boy.
Now, I would choose Cross. And again, I don't want people to take this the wrong way, but I mean, Javonte Jean-Baptiste created the first interception and it was an overthrow right into the hands of,
he had a great day.
Of Watts. And the scoop and score was created by Cam Hart's fumble, and lo and behold, Watts happened to be there. I'm not taking anything away from Watts, but when Howard Cross has a game like he did, that all of that is pretty much self-created by him.
Yeah. So that Coney game, I don't know how I had this at my fingertips, but I looked it up really fast. Coney's 17 tackles, 12 stuffs.
Oh my God.
That's insane. Also, off top of my head, this is because I ended up falling in love with the guy's pass rushing skills this game. Julian Aquara had 8 QB pressures, 7 on third down when they almost lost to Pitt in 2018. Now, he wasn't sacking him every time, so it doesn't seem as cool, but they would have lost to Pitt and not played for the playoffs.
Well, Benjamin Morrison had a pretty good game last year, too.
Against Clemson, yes, he did. There's a lot of them. There's a lot of them out there.
Yeah.
Howard Cross is the answer, though.
Howard Cross is the answer from recently. We have a question from BL Casper. Boubacar Traore, you've got to use him while you've got him, right? Seems like a waste to try to save a year of eligibility when he can help your pass rush now.
That was game eight. Yeah, he's played 1 and he can play a game 9, 10, 11, 12. And I would not redshirt him right now. If he turns his ankle in week 11, I certainly wouldn't play him in week 12. I would be prudent in that way. You don't get him ready to play 1 game I know what you're saying, Tim. Play him four games.
Yeah. He can play three of the remaining five.
Yeah. But one of them I would play on these next 2 weeks, and then you figure it out from there.
Maybe start the Pitt game and see how it starts out. And if you jump to a lead, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that you have a little conversation with the kid himself and see what he thinks about it. Like normally I would say, oh, let's not overreact to one snap, but we've seen that. We saw snaps from Triore. Now those were against a young offensive lineman who's not ready to play by any means right now. Right. And this was the right tech. Yeah, hey, the interesting.
You mean in practice for people listening? You're not talking about the USC stack.
No, the interesting thing was going into. I don't have their offensive line. I know them by numbers right now. Going into the game, I thought their left tackle, number 79, was the most vulnerable, and it proved to be number 71, the right tackle. And JJB set him up so beautifully. First of all, he beat him off the edge, on the first interception. And then the next time they were in that situation, right off the snap, number 71, the right tackle, immediately moved to his right, and JJB reacted perfectly and took, they work on those kind of drills with Al Washington all the time, is that diagnosis. So depending upon which way that the offensive lineman moves, you have to react in the opposite reaction. That's what JJB did, and just abused 71.
Best thing about that whole topic, Tim, is that they didn't fire Al Washington like they were supposed to a few weeks ago and last year too, because that would have been a problem.
Yeah, that's very true. Al Washington caught a little bit of heat from Marcus Freeman as they were heading into halftime. I assume it was Triore's lack of discipline
and sneeze too. Yeah, I think
Again, normally I would say we're talking about one play, but we have seen Triore in practice, and he's absolutely a guy that coming up here, whether it's short term future or long term future, is going to be a real presence for Notre Dame in the pass rush.
Someone told you or told Samson it might take a while, but we hit on Traore. That was back in August. There was one of those things where, he's going to hit. We're not saying he's not coming out.
I don't remember who told me that, but it was me that was told that. Yeah. And the wild thing is he came here. I know there was talk about, well, is he a Viper or is he a strong side end? And I wasn't convinced that he was a Viper when they arrived in July. And I was wrong. He absolutely has that quick twitch and the ability, I think, to be a real presence at that. And they need it, because we're talking about it all the time. Virtually everybody can be a strong side.
I was going to say, I like him at strong side. End,
but it's that quick twitch that you need on the opposite side.
Next question is ND Quebec. Has Notre Dame given up on Tobias Merriweather? That is a first semester sophomore, Tim, in case you're scoring at home. He was almost invisible Saturday night.
Yeah, I was going to say, no, they haven't given up on Tobias Merriweather long term, but short term, obviously they're not trotting him out there as much. And when we cite the receptions per targets, it's just not good. And until that improves, those are hollow snaps. And so yes, you have to react like a good coaching staff should, midstream. And if he's not being productive, you have to go back out on the practice field again the next week and try to make him productive and earn that next opportunity on the field. But until then, those are hollow snaps, man. And you can't have that, not especially with this young receiver that you just threw into the equation against Louisville that I think has to get snaps based upon your current situation.
I agree that Faison needs snaps. It's still the same thing, though, that technically, or basically, Tyree Faison and JG play the same spot. Yep. Jaden Thomas back will lessen Merriweather's snaps, and Rico Flores continues. If this is his version of a rookie wall, he's fine. Good job, Flores. You're still battling and playing well. But you definitely need Tobias to help with the outside rotation, too. Now, he's going to go from number one in snaps to number five, I bet. And I would not think six is he's going to put more snaps going forward than Faison is. I just say for that.
Tim, the last guy that's going to give up on him is Chancey Stuckey, because Chancey Stuckey is the one that is so, or has been so optimistic about his upside.
I feel like I spend the last five podcasts defending Tobias Merriweather's future and his willingness to block, because I spent the first three asking him to make a play. But it's that they're both still true. It's still true. We did hear he could have sat out the Duke game with a hamstring injury, but they didn't have enough players, so he played. He gutted through that, played all those plays. Maybe he had a little bit of a hamstring strain going into this game. That's possible. But it's also, as I said, 26 career targets and 8 catches going into the game is another reason why he lost some playing time, I think.
Now you can't give up on a guy. I mean, just like when you say give up, that means forever. They're not in that spot.
you reward play, though, and play would not be rewarded to be the number. He's definitely not number one in snaps going forward. That's silly.
No, I don't see that. And then, you know, in comes Micah Gilbert, in comes Cam Williams, Logan Saldate. I think Gilbert is a guy that I think Gilbert is going to be, you know, maybe this is silly talk. Gilbert's going to be on equal footing to Cam Williams when he comes in.
I think that's a great call, but the only reason when you said silly, I wanted to say right before that, if this were 2021 and Notre Dame's receiving corps was struggling, you would say, yeah, I got Tobias Merriweather coming in next year. So
yeah, no, I know. I totally get that. But I mean, you project and you anticipate those guys coming in and, you know, Braylon James, I don't know. I think he's got a lot of progress that he needs to make, but the skill set, you know, the skill set there is comparable to Merriweather, is it not? I mean, just flat skill set.
He'll have 20 months on Notre Dame's football program by the time he needs to make a play next year. Braylon James, that helps too, to get in rotation.
We're told he has a long way to go.
Yes, yeah, but 20 months is good. Hey, once again, if I scream make a play to Tobias Merriweather, I might say the same thing in 23 months if Braylon James is in there as well, because some point you gotta.
Very true. Question from Joe T or Joe Ty, it's not a question. He says, not a question. Just wanted to say how nice it was to see Nolan Ziegler in uniform running down the field. Good for him. Tim, if you haven't seen it yet, he was on kick return. I'm not sure exactly what else he's on, but he was feisty and aggressive, very active. And yeah, I didn't. Oh no, that's not true. I did see him in the game. I did tell you. I said during the game.
You did. Yeah, you mentioned
he was out there. So I did see it during the game, but saw it a little bit more in rewatching the game. And he was feisty, and absolutely, Notre Dame needs Nolan Ziegler. They need him this year as a backup linebacker. I think, I think those guys, the veteran guys, might have gotten a little bit more time off because he was ready. I think they felt he was ready to. He was the backup for the two inside linebacker positions, so I think they felt he was ready. But yeah, absolutely good for him. Glad things are going better for him, and hope he can have a productive career at Notre Dame.
Yeah, and he's probably getting back into game shape too. There's no way he was in full football game shape going to that spot, so he could help special teams in November, that's for sure. Next is W Carry 14. What is your understanding of the timeout before the half that allowed USC to kick the field goal to make it 24-6? Jason Garrett said it was a shrewd move to call timeout and avoid the penalty. Yet it looked like they weren't going to get the snap off. And if they had gotten the snap off, Williams was going to spike the football.
Marcus Freeman is in total no man's land there having to make that decision. But he sees as I wrote it in the tail of tape, he sees his three blind mice offside over on the other side of the line of scrimmage celebrating. And it's really funny to see their reaction when you see the end zone shot of when they realize it. Holy crap, I've got it. We got to get back onside. But I
what is Leofau doing? What is Leofau doing?
I don't know. Leofau should know better. But yes. when it happened live, I said to you, great call by Freeman.
Because he's going deep. I would have thought the same thing.
Yeah, you don't know whether he's going to try to spike the ball or whether time's going to run out or whether he's going to go 11-on-8.
It looked like they weren't going to get the snap off, and had they gotten it off, Williams was going to spike the football. We know that now. We saw the replay. He had to adjust in real time with the clock ticking from 7 seconds is when the guys were jumping around to when he was trying to get him up.
Look, I thought Marcus Freeman, under the circumstances, made the wisest decision when he had to make a decision in 0.0001 second.
In real time, it was the decision I would have made as well, because I would have thought Caleb Williams would have thought to himself, I'm taking a shot here. And it's the freest shot of all free shots. It doesn't matter if you throw an interception touchdown. You still get to kick a field goal in the next play.
Right. And even Caleb Williams has to work that through his mind in a split second, too. I don't know what.
It looked like he was going to spike it, but I know that because I've watched the play 27 times. It's not the same thing as Marcus Freeman in real time.
Yeah. No, I thought it was, I'm not sure I would have thought of calling a timeout.
I was just like, what in the world is going on?
Exactly. Well,
my job though either. So that's important.
I almost threw my pen when.
Well, he's not a punter. That's why you didn't throw your pen. So there was.
What are they doing? What are you doing? All right, we're going to wrap up with a question from CR Lewis 80. And that is, if Notre Dame goes 10-2, what are the odds of playing at full strength? Whom could you foresee skipping the bowl game?
I'd say the odds are none that they play at full strength nowadays.
Yeah.
They're not. They're not going to play at full strength at 10-2. That's just the way it is nowadays. No. It's a problem.
I mean, you see Joe Alt skipping a bowl game. I don't see him as.
I don't.
Some linemen aren't.
Right. Wired that way.
Patterson,
but he could. Didn't.
And Patterson had suffered multiple significant injuries, and Joe Alt.
He had to. Not. Patterson had to skip the bowl game. He would not have skipped the bowl game without the injuries. Wait, I mean, he would not have considered skipping a bowl game without injuries, Jarrett Patterson. And he played.
He played. Yeah, no, right. Okay, I see what you're saying.
We went back and forth on Patterson a little bit because we were like, well, you got to consider skipping the bowl game if you're Jarrett Patterson, but he still didn't do it.
I will forever love Jarrett Patterson for that decision.
Yes, my point is, though, all is also a first round draft pick. As opposed to Jarrett Patterson.
Very true.
In there. Yep. Hartman, I don't think we'll skip the bowl game, assuming it's a major. A 10-2, all bets are off if it's not 10. If they're in the equivalent of whatever the Camping World Bowl is called right these days.
Okay, but fair enough. And that's how the question was asked, a 10-2. Yes.
I think Hartman will play the bowl game, the major bowl game, the New Year's Day bowl game. I don't know if Estime would be advised too heavily not to.
I think Estime would skip it.
Me too.
And it's not an indictment on him.
It's the position.
It's the position. How about Howard Cross?
He'll play.
Cam Hart should skip it with his injury history.
Yes. He has got him. He went from delusional draft pick last year before he got hurt to an actual draft pick now. Cam Hart should be advised to skip the bowl game. I hate saying those things, but.
Yeah, I know. I would advise him to skip the bowl game.
Let's remind people that's three shoulder surgeries for Cam Hart already. He should skip the bowl game.
Oh, I bet J.D. Bertrand skips a bowl game.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't foresee that happening.
Do you think there's still people that would advise him from our message board to skip the bowl game after last week's game, after this past game? Because I don't think so.
You know how much I go on and on about Tale of the Tape, and it might be my longest ever, and I hadn't written about J.D. Bertrand. I just said, nothing to say, man. And I said, J.D. Bertrand was fantastic. End of story. He was great once again.
If there's anyone out there that still doesn't want J.D. Bertrand helping Notre Dame win football games, just know that I asked J.D. Bertrand post-game about Jalen Snead, because that was Jalen Snead's best game, and J.D. Bertrand's face absolutely lit up to talk about Jalen Snead. There's another thing you need to know about J.D. Bertrand.
That's what kind of guy he is and what kind of teammate he is. He's one of the most productive linebackers in Notre Dame football history. Again, end of story. Productivity. I mean, my God, I don't know what else you can ask for in a 3-year span than what you got from J.D. Bertrand.
You know what? It might be unfortunate there's not more guys that would skip the bowl game. We'll look at that one in terms of overall top level talent, because normally you're like, well, Kyle Hamilton's skipping the bowl game. These guys got to skip the bowl game.
I'm going to go by position here. I don't think Hartman will. I do think Estime will and should.
And Hart, just because of injuries.
and Hart because of injuries. All the first round draft choice stuff is certainly legit. I don't think Cross will skip. Devontae Jean-Baptiste, I think it's probably in his best interest to continue to add to his profile, but he's ended up having a really, really good season here.
Someone's gonna completely surprise us and skip that we don't think about these guys in the Riley Mills realm and the somebody, you know what I mean? There's gonna be someone weird. What if Xavier Watts does this to Clemson and Wake Forest and Stanford? He's gonna skip.
that thought did cross my mind when I saw this. What about Mitchell Evans?
No, I think he's coming back to Notre Dame next year.
I certainly hope that he does, but he doesn't have to.
No, but for anybody that thinks Mitchell Evans is getting beaten out by one of the young tight ends next year, I got news for you.
Yeah, not going to happen. All right, we can go on and on as we have, Tim. When it's a two-man team, we talk more than we do when it's three.
Well, we just asked we got a question where we got to ask about the entire roster, so we couldn't stop going.
We're gonna wrap up with that one. We are coming back. We will have a podcast on Thursday, despite the bye week, and we'll probably continue much of this conversation, most of which will be about how upset people are. There are more people upset with the offense not being good enough than they are happy that they just beat USC by 4 touchdowns. And I will remind people that Notre Dame's offense, defense, and special teams all wear the same uniform. And so when you win by 4 touchdowns, that is better than the offense struggle. Look, I'm being a jerk here, but I understand that
the offense needs to be better on offense.
There's no doubt about that. All right, rambling on here. We're going to wrap it up with that. Thanks for joining us. This has been Irish Illustrated Insider.